If you're a smoker or dipper looking to make a change, you really only need one reason to do it. But with Zyn nicotine pouches, you can find many. Zyn is America's number one nicotine pouch. It's made with only 6 simple ingredients. Plus, Zyn is the only nicotine pouch with a 10-day hassle-free trial. There are lots of options when it comes to nicotine satisfaction, but there's only one Zyn. Find your Zyn online or in a store near you at zyn.com/find. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
For the longest time, I sort of just, it didn't click in my brain that, oh yeah, I do comedy.
Okay.
Like, to me, I just didn't do comedy. I'm like, no, I'm not funny. Like, not at all. Like, that's, why would I do comedy? I remember even saying, like, it's not like I'd ever do an Adam Sandler film. Cut to Zohan. Hi, I'm Emmanuel Shrieky, and I am an actress that loves to travel the world.
Hello, gentle listeners from far and wide. Welcome to a new episode of Off the Beat. I am, as always, your host, Brian Baumgartner. And as you just heard today, we're going to be joined by one of my favorites, the amazing Emmanuel Shrieky. You might know her as Sloane from Entourage. She also played Claire Bonner in Snow Day. And now she's starring as Lana Lang in the hit TV show Superman and Lois. From rom-coms to video games and now the Arrowverse, Emmanuel, she has truly done it all. And to think it all started with a McDonald's commercial at age 10. Yes, the acting bug got her very early on. Look, I don't have to tell you everything she's done because she is here to do that herself. Let's dive right in, shall we? Here she is, Emmanuel Shrieky.
Bubble and squeak, I love it. Bubble and squeak, I know. Bubble and squeak, I cook it every morning, left over from the night before.
What's up?
Hello.
Em, how are you?
I'm so good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you so much for coming to talk to me.
Oh, my pleasure. Of course.
Where are you?
At my house in West Hollywood.
You're in LA. Well, uh-huh. I know you travel around all the time, constantly working and on the road. Well, welcome back home to Los Angeles.
Thank you. Let me tell you, I'm on hiatus right now, and it is so good to be back in LA for the summer. It's been amazing.
Where do you film Superman and Lois?
We shoot the show in Vancouver.
All right. Your homeland.
Yes, my homeland, but this is my home here.
Yes.
But it's great. It's the same time zone. It's an easy flight.
Right. All right. Well, I want to talk to you about Superman and Lois in a little bit. First, I want to start by going back to your homeland. I know you grew up outside of Toronto. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah.
I don't think that I've talked to anyone else that this is true of. You grew up in an Orthodox Jewish household. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Modern Orthodox. Like
modern Orthodox. Weren't,
yeah. Like it wasn't, when I say, I think, I don't know, maybe I should come up with a different terminology. It was Orthodox in the sense that like we did Shabbat every Friday. We were kosher at home. Milk and meat, like separate sinks, you know, dishes. All the high holidays, but like day to day was normal.
Okay.
Yeah.
So really just the Shabbat and the big holidays, but yeah. I mean, keeping a kosher kitchen at home.
That was a big deal.
That's a thing. Right?
Yeah. When I had friends over, I had to be like, don't use that sponge.
Yeah. No, I, well, that's so interesting. I mean, to come out of that type of environment and that type of household, mm-hmm. I was told your first, at least paid acting job was in a McDonald's commercial.
Yeah.
Is that, now this is my guess is you probably weren't eating McDonald's. Correct. Is that right?
Maybe the Filet-O-Fish.
Oh, was that fine? The Filet-O-Fish was fine?
Yeah. Like, that's the thing. We would go out to dinner, you know, it's just nothing was allowed in the house. That was the stipulation. Yeah.
Okay. You started acting young. Now, were you instantly, well, how did you start acting? What was your first experience?
My first experience was doing community theater in Unionville, where I lived. It was called the Unionville Theater Company. And my classmate at school had said, you know, do you want to audition for my dad's play? Because his dad ran the theater company. And I auditioned for the role of the baby ghost in this Canadian play called Listen to the Wind. And it was like, you know, a full-on theater experience at 7 years old. And I was in, like, I was like, this is amazing. This is what I want to do.
Oh, at age seven, as baby ghost, you were like, this,
yeah,
this is it. And was it theater specifically, or was it being on stage, theater?
Yeah, that's like my roots. And then, you know, the town that I lived in, Unionville, we, when it was time to start high school, they were building a high school for the performing arts, and they had an amazing theater program. So, you know, it was like, I was all in. I was like, I had to audition and I had to get in. I mean, I don't know what I would have done if I never got accepted.
How far were you from Toronto?
Like a 25-30 minute drive outside the city.
Okay. And so you started, because I mentioned the McDonald's commercial, you started, what did you get an agent, or you started like in terms of commercial stuff?
Yeah.
Or?
So what happened was that during high school in the theater program in Canada, there is a television station called YTV, which is like the equivalent of Nickelodeon, we'll say.
Right,
and they were having a writing competition, and the winner of the writing competition would have their show produced. And they chose our school as the location, just because it was a new, you know, very beautiful kind of a la 90210 looking high school. And they auditioned our theater department.
Okay.
So that was sort of like my foray into film and television. And from that, I got an agent and then sort of started, you know, doing commercials and one-liners and two-liners and, you know, a week here, guest star there.
Right. So in your early experience on camera, how for you was that different than doing work in the theater? Were you still interested more in theater, or did you start to really feel like film and television was where you wanted to move?
You know, it's interesting. I think that I made that decision sort of later, because when I started in film and television, I was still in high school and, you know, learning everything from Stanislavski and Uta Hagen and all the method acting and all the things.
Sure.
And so it was just sort of something that I was doing parallel to going to school. And then when I went to college for a year and I majored in another theater program. And it was at that point that it felt a little bit redundant. Like, really, my high school had such an amazing program. And at that point, sort of later on, I really saw that I actually wanted a career in film versus theater.
Okay.
And why? So then I think just, you know, I have intense stage fright.
Really?
I know, it gets crazy. Yeah. It's like pretty intense.
Still?
And yeah, I get really nervous, like sick. Like I literally am like, oh my God, why am I doing this? This is a nightmare. Why, you know? And then of course, once you're in it and the magic takes over, you're like, oh, that was the best thing ever. But that was like a big thing for me. And I don't know. I just felt that. I think my inspiration really came from so many movies that I had watched growing up. And I think I just had this dream that I really wanted to be a part of that. That way I had like a very big influence on me. So yeah, so I just sort of pursued it and seemed to have been the way to go.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me because my experience was just so different. Like and now, you know, you hear so much about Atlanta. I grew up in Atlanta. And there's so much.
I love Atlanta, by the way. Uh-huh.
Well, there you go. There's so much work happening. You know, you can't be an actor now and not work in Atlanta. And there's so much stuff happening there. At the time, I know there was less, but it wasn't even a part of my consciousness, film and television or being on film or like getting an agent. Like, and I don't know what that says about me or, you know, obviously it was a different time, but for me, it was just theater. It was like, oh no, I want to be an actor and I want to be a theater actor. And that was it. And that was it for a really long time, actually.
Sure.
So yes, fascinating to me to talk to people whose experience started at least early on. And yeah, I mean, a McDonald's commercial here and a couple of lines there, whatever, but having that experience of being on film, on being on a set, which is such a different experience. I mean, you're fundamentally, you're doing the same thing. You're acting, you're playing a character, whatever that character is or does. But the experience of creation is so different.
Beyond.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, though, Brian, to your point, was that like, you're right. Nowadays, to be in film and television, it's virtually unheard of to not end up in Atlanta.
Right.
But I think that that happened fairly recently. Like, I would say the industry exploded in Atlanta, what, within the last 10 years?
Maybe. That's probably a little
more?
Yeah.
You know, whereas like Toronto was always a place where there was a pretty thriving film and television community. So I think it just is exposure. Like,
that's
think, you know what I mean? Like, and also in my theater program, there were kids, you know, who were on Degrassi Junior High. So it was in my consciousness already. But right. I think if I had grown up like you, I probably would have stuck in theater far longer until maybe the opportunity arose, you know?
Right. Yeah. How were your parents? Were they supportive? I mean, obviously at you're 10, they have to drive you or whatever.
Yeah.
Were they supportive of the experience? And obviously
beyond.
Okay.
Beyond. Like, I am so lucky. I had the support of my entire family. I mean, my parents were supportive, my older brother, my older sister, like everybody sort of felt like that's what I should be doing. Like, I think, you know, just because I was sort of one of these youngsters that was, I was really into music and dancing and entertainment of all kinds. And I was a bit of a ham as a kid. I became a lot shyer the older I got. But like as a little one, I was really, I loved just performing for people. So I think I'm so lucky that I had the support of my family, you know, fairly consistently.
That's great. Did you sing?
I thought I could. No, I don't sing.
That's what I always say. That's what I, because I mean, people are like, oh, did you do musicals and stuff? And I was like, yeah, kind of. But like looking back, yeah. I was very, very clearly talk singing. Like I could, I could talk sing on the rhythm. And as long as there was some comedy role involved, then I could crush that pretty good. But looking back, it's like, no, I couldn't really
sing. Yeah, no, no.
I couldn't really sing.
I mean, listen, I had to sing for my audition for theater school for college. And I mean, like, I did it. Right. But I mean, you know, like enough to basically be like, well, she can hold a tune, you know, but it's so crazy because I've often thought about how, like, even today, like how I would actually love to take singing classes because similar to like my stage fright, like I think the two are linked. Like I know that I can hold a tune, but I'm so stuck. Like I just can't let go. I get so freaked out and I just don't do it. And I feel like if I can get over that hump, it could probably free me up as a performer just all around.
Oh,
because it's a bit of a fear, you know?
Yeah. I want to talk about your stage fright just a little bit more because I didn't know this. Is it about being in front of people?
I think like stage fright is a combination of like, you know, it's the actor's nightmare of being like,
yes,
out there. It's, you can't call cut. And like, what if you forget your lines? What if like something goes wrong? It's all the things, like all the narratives that go in your head that are completely fear-based that like paralyze me. But just a little, like, I mean, I managed to get through it, but man, it's pretty intense.
Yeah. I would say I didn't have like traditional stage fright. I mean, of course I have had those nightmares. Those nightmares continue to today. And for those of you who are listening who don't know what we're talking about, there is a very specific actor's nightmare where you are sleeping, but suddenly, right? I mean, it can be any number of things. Like you're about to get on stage and you don't know where your costume is or your wardrobe or you're on stage and you don't know what you're supposed to say and everyone is looking at you. And yeah, that anxiety dream that exists. I think I had it more on live shows. I had it for a bit.
Oh wow.
And I think for me, it was about, there wasn't a script. Right.
Yeah.
And somehow it was different than improv because I feel like in improv, you sort of find your time to jump in and you jump in. This is more like someone is asking you questions and you're not exactly clear what those questions are going to be or where it's going to lead.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you a quick story. I was still getting, this is a long time ago now, but I was on a late night television show. I'm not going to mention the name of it. It is since does not exist. And there's a live studio audience and it's live late night and I'm in the chair and the host says to me, so we have a surprise for you. You don't know what it is, right? And I said, no. And he said, yeah. And then makes this very big deal about the fact that this is truly a surprise. This isn't a TV surprise. Like you really don't know what it is. And I felt my face turn hot and begin to sweat like uncontrollably because I truly don't know what it was. And it's funny that it's this because we were just discussing it. This was, by the way, this was not planned. They suddenly start playing a video and the video is a video of me in high school singing in a tux.
No way.
Singing in, and this is kind of before you can find anything in the world online or whatever. And I had not seen this video, I don't think ever. I mean, it was like VHS recorded video of me singing to Dream the Impossible Dream on video. And I'm like, and I kind of got up and started singing on the show, like at the end, because I was like, I don't even know what to do. I don't even know what to do. And that probably damaged me for a while. Just that experience of not it actually coming out, but just saying like, we're going to surprise you and you don't know what it is in front of all of these people. That was my, that was my nightmare.
Hell, like your personal hell.
That was my personal hell. Yeah.
Oh my God. You know, I also had like the true, it was my nightmare come true.
Okay.
But ironically, it wasn't on stage. It was on a television show that I was doing a couple years back called Murder in the First.
Yes.
I was playing this gang unit cop. And for a week, I had been learning like pages and pages of dialogue. And I had it down. And then the night before, the writer sends me new scenes. But like, Brian, brand new. Okay. Now, here's what I need to tell you. This is, everybody who knows me knows this. I do not have a photographic memory and I need time to work on my shit. Like for real. I mean, Superman and Lois knows that. Every show I work on knows that. That's just how I roll. It's how my brain works.
Right.
So the night before, I am flipping out. And for the first time in my life, I took like half an Adderall and I was like, I have to learn this. I have to do this. So I'm stressed to the max, anxious, barely slept, get to set the next day. I'm beside myself. And I go to the director and she's like the loveliest woman, Allison Anders. She was directing our episode. And I'm like, Allison, I got to tell you, they changed all my stuff at the very last minute. And like, I don't learn stuff quickly, but I've certainly done my best. I just want you to know that. She's like, no problem. It's all good. I was like, awesome. We'll probably just, you know, do it in snippets, whatever. I get to set. And she says to me, sweetheart, it's a walk and talk.
Oh, no.
One shot. Walk and talk.
Oh, I mean,
instant, like you don't even know. So I'm like there. I mean, I think of maybe 7 or 8 takes. I think I got it once. Honest to God, I got it once. And I got it because like after the 5th or 6th take, I'm like in the back of, we're like shooting in this warehouse. My co-star Kathleen Roberts, and she was like, you've got this. I heard you in the trailer. You've got this. I'm like panicking and tears are streaming down my face.
No.
And I'm like, before action, I like walk to the back of the warehouse and I literally pray to both my parents. They're both passed away. And I'm like, Mom, Dad, if you could hear me right now, I need you so bad. I have to get through this. And lo and behold, somehow I did. However, Brian, after I had a meeting with the writer, with the creator of the show, and I was like, that was easily the most stressful moment of my life. And I'll tell you, I got it just barely. I did not do my best work.
Yeah.
Honest to God, but it was the true actor's nightmare.
That's tough.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last 1.5 years. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
the war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because, God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. ...that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You started with a lot of comedy and kind of romantic comedy roles.
Yeah.
Detroit Rock City, Snow Day with the amazing Gene Smart, Chevy Chase, Adam and Eve. You don't mess with the Zohan. Was there something specifically that drew you to those type of roles, or did those type of roles just start finding you?
I think they just started finding me, you know, because for the longest time, I sort of just, it didn't click in my brain that, oh yeah, I do comedy.
Okay.
Like, to me, I just didn't do comedy. I'm like, no, I'm not funny. Like, not at all. Like, that's, why would I do comedy? I remember even saying, like, it's not like I'd ever do an Adam Sandler film. Cut to Zohan. You know, I remember a few years ago, I did Super Troopers 2. And Jay Chandrasekhar, you know, we talk on the phone and he's like, he wants me for this part. And I'm like, Jay, I don't honestly think that I'm your person. Like, I don't do comedy. And he was like, are you kidding? And I was like, no, I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding at all. He's like, I mean, he did this thing and he jokes about it today. He was like, Emmanuel's like the only actor that I've ever like spoken to on the phone that tried to talk her way out of doing a part. And I was like, oh God, that's really messed up. Anyway, I did it. I had the best time. So yeah, I guess I do comedy.
Yes. You, of course you do comedy. You were then eventually cast in, well, I would say a very important, obviously huge comedy, Entourage. It's crazy when I looked back on, and I was like, I think this is true. Is this really true? 2005, Entourage and The Office started at like exactly the same time.
Oh, like, my God.
Two crazy different shows, both successful in their own way, but they started at the same time, obviously on two different networks. Now, you joined Entourage in the second season, obviously, as Sloan. Did you watch the first season? Were you aware of it?
Barely. I think I watched like a couple episodes just to know what I was going to go do, you know? But no, it wasn't even, you know, it really popped by like third season. It really hit. But I think like it was a little slow burn out the gate. Second season, it started to definitely get some momentum. And by third season, it was just like water cooler conversation.
Right. What was your experience of auditioning for the role of Sloan?
Oh my God. It was so wild. First of all, it was like a 3-episode arc. Okay. It was literally like just 3 episodes. But apparently the story goes that they really wanted to find E's new girlfriend. And they had cast some wonderful ladies and for whatever reasons, it just, you know, never really worked out. And so when I auditioned initially, it went really, really well. And when I got the call back, they had already like altered the role to be like to basically insinuate that my father was Malcolm McDowell and that my mother was Israeli, like just to explain the coloring or whatever. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And like Kevin Connolly had called me before the callback because I think he just loved, I didn't even know him. I guess he had seen the tapes or whatever and really sort of gravitated towards my audition. And he just called me and he was like, do exactly what you did. Like, that was great. And then we read together at the callback. And in the very last hour, there was another actress that was like, primed to get it. And I think, you know, Doug Ellen sort of fought hard for me and it went my way. And Kevin Connolly was the one who called me and offered me the part. Like he got permission to do that, which was so sweet. I know. And then like, I've talked about this so much is that Entourage was like the gift that keeps on giving. Like it was the rest of the series plus a movie that started out as like a 3-episode arc.
Wow.
The game changer, that one.
Yes. How long after the first 3 did you know you were going to stick around?
I think it just sort of kept happening incrementally. Like they just kept writing and writing and then third season and fourth season. And so it was like, you know, I never was a regular on that show. I was always a recurring because the regulars had, you know, the front billing with all of their names and the thing. And then I ended up having that for the movie.
what was it like going back after so much time and doing the movie? I mean, aside from being fun and I'm sure reuniting with all those guys again, do you feel like you were different at that point, after so much time had passed from when you started so long before?
Not at all. Like, honestly, not at all. I mean, 5 years had gone by and it felt as though we picked up exactly where we left off. It was wild. It didn't even feel like it had been 5 years, you know? And the crazy part is that still to this day, like when we all hang or see each other, it's surreal to all of us that it's been 15 years since the beginning. It's like, wait, what?
Right.
That doesn't even make sense.
I know. You had a director, Julian Farino.
Yeah.
Who directed, based on my research, a little over a quarter of the episodes. You know, Julian came on. He and I became fairly close, I would say. He started directing The Office a few episodes. And he and I would sit, because I guess I still am, I'm doing this. I'm just kind of a nerd of the business. And we just kept start talking about the fact that these two shows were at the time very big, very popular. People were watching and they could not have been any more different.
From
each other. What do you think the success of Entourage was? What do you think was what gravitated people towards it?
Gosh, Brian. I think there's so many things. I mean, I feel like, and you can attest to this, I feel like people are fascinated with the business, mm-hmm. right? Like people who aren't in the business, just sort of in the world at large. Like when you go to a dinner party and you're like the only actor, suddenly all conversation is like pointed to you and you're like, ah, no.
Right.
So there's this real like inherent fascination, curiosity. And I think that had a real big appeal, especially because we were really exploring the sort of funny, but also gnarly underbelly of what is Hollywood, you know, and it was controversial and it was touted as misogynistic and it was all of these things. But like, it was like, yeah, but what do you think the business is? Pre-Me Too. What do you think this fucking business was?
Right.
Do you know, like when Doug was writing that stuff, that was not out of like his imagination. And I think people were floored by that. I think that had a big part to do with it. What do you think?
That makes so much sense. I think that makes so much sense. I mean, I think that for me, what was so interesting about the two shows, you know, being popular and again, like basically being created and happening at the same time.
At the same time, yeah.
There was a sexy escapism aspect of Entourage and kind of more specifically like what you're talking about those dinner party conversations when you're there and people want to know and they want to hear. And to a large degree, I think there was a lot of controversy about Entourage because of the things that you were talking about. It generated a ton of discussion, but I think also like that, I don't know, sexy people and private planes and, you know, like that whole sort of sexy escapism. And what's fascinating to me is we were just the opposite, right? Like as a show, we could not have been any, I mean, we were literally selling paper in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
It's so good. Yeah.
And that was what Julian and I were talking about. I mean, they were both happening when he was there and it was like, he's directing our show and the next week he's going to wherever you guys were on location or whatever. And I was like, well, this is just so interesting to me that the two shows exist at exactly the same time in the same place. And this is what the shows are exploring. And these are the variety of ways that people can be entertained and want to watch. I feel like that is just fascinating.
Oh my gosh. I agree with you. I mean, I do. I mean, which just goes to show you there's room for everything at the same time.
That's right. What do you most, when you think back on that experience, and as you said, the gift that keeps on giving, what are you most proud of yourself and your experience, either of the show or your role on the show or what you did? Does anything come to mind?
Yeah. I mean, God, that's such a good question. You know, I don't, for all the entourage talk that I've done over the years, I don't think that anybody's ever asked me that. I think it was just a really, it was interesting to play a role that it's not like I had that much screen time, right. You know, it was like, it was the boys' show, but we created, I guess, these characters that really hit a chord. And it's just sort of, I guess it just found it like just a huge honor and compliment that people really just like resonated to this woman. And that like for a show like that, Sloane was known as this sort of like grounded, smart, sort of sophisticated and saucy. But like that it wasn't just this like overly sexified role, like that part of her appeal was more than that. And it was a testament to Doug writing that kind of woman. Like he was very protective of Sloane. So, I mean, I guess looking back, like if I were to look back on my career, I would be like, wow, I guess I am really proud of that, you know, to have a character that people just really wanted to get to know. Is a massive compliment.
That's great.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know what. God, if you show me, God, if you tell me, God, if, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You think you're not a comedy person. You certainly are. You certainly are. But after Entourage, and I'm more interested in whether this was intentional or, again, if this just kind of happened, you started working, doing a lot of crime, thriller,
yeah,
dark action.
Fully intentional.
Was it?
Yeah.
Murder in the First, 100%. Cleaners, Mentalist. Oh, yeah. Yes.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
All you just wanted something different.
I just wanted to, well, you know, okay.
Yes.
So, you know, like the infamous they like to put us in a box, right? You're that kind of performer. This is what you do. You look that way. You have this kind of voice or charm or whatever. This is what you do. And coming from the theater, it's like, no, that's not what I do. That's easy. I get to basically be me and get to say some great dialogue. But like, this is what I do.
Right?
So it was very intentional to mix it up and to just try to sink my teeth into stuff that I wouldn't otherwise necessarily be thought of.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Emmanuel, you and I are the same. I don't even know. That's like, I can't even say that. But no, it's exactly the same. When The Office was over, and it's funny, I was just at an event with a lot of Office fans, and mm-hmm. a few people brought up, actually, like, you know, I did Law & Order SVU and Criminal Minds. People bring up Criminal Minds all the time, and they're like, that's not you. What are you know? You did that. You were good, but that's not you. Or I'll get an interview and they'll start talking about my background in comedy. And I'm not being snarky. I'm like, yeah. I actually don't have one. I didn't do improv. That wasn't my thing. Like, I was traveling around the country playing horrible people, like trying to find some bit of humanity in rapists and abusers and all of that.
Oh,
I was
God.
Like, that's much more what I do. Mm-hmm. But it's fascinating that we both decided. I'm really glad to hear that.
Yeah.
That it was an intentional choice by you.
Oh, yeah. That's funny, Brian. That's actually very funny. You're right. I do. I completely get it. And I think, too, is that, you know, there is something to be said, though, for really genius casting, because you know, a show like The Office worked because it was brilliantly cast. Now, the argument is, okay, but are you casting the person or are you casting based on essence? And I feel like it's kind of 50-50. Like it's a little of course, what you bring to it. And it's a little of the essence that you bring. And that's the reality of the situation.
Right.
Which sometimes hurts because you're just like, no, I can do this. Right. Like, I know that. Right.
I do have to say this. I've actually never, ever revealed this ever before. Not that it's like a big scoop or whatever, but I don't know the person's name. But I will tell you, because I was trying to do like, you know, dramas, and I had done quite a few and some recurring stuff. Mm-hmm. But I remember very specifically Criminal Minds. Criminal Minds is an odd show, right? Because Criminal Minds is the show about the serial killers. And how that show is structured is that there is a cast, there is a regular cast, but basically whoever they bring in as the serial killer of that episode is actually the star of the episode.
Like 100%.
That's the structure of the show. And whoever it was, and God bless you, if you happen to be listening, I'll try to do the research later. That was a straight offer. And I will tell you that I give whoever that was a tremendous amount of, because I remember talking to my manager and saying like, they're offering it to me. God, I read it and it's like and I said, no, I was so happy because I was like, yes, I can do this, but I can with absolute certainty say no one has ever seen me do this before.
Seen me that way.
So
right.
Someone is like just really going out on a limb and saying that they wanted this experience. So anyway, I
God bless
I've never really thought about telling that before. But yeah, that happened. That's good for you. You're now on.
And you.
You're, yeah, a totally different kind of show, Superman and Lois. Now, are you a comic book person? Are you an Arrowverse? Is that what we call it? An Arrowverse person?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, definitely not.
Did you know who Superman was?
Yes.
Okay.
Much I knew. Okay. And I knew, like, you know, I had watched, you know, the Donner movies, like back in the day, whatever. You know, we all know, man, what planet are you on if you don't know who, at least who Superman is?
Who Superman is? Lois Lane, Clark Kent, right. Yeah, that thing.
But like, I had never in my career, well, you know, I mean, I was a bit of a TV snob. I mean, I was on HBO for 8 years, and then I worked with Hulu on this amazing dark show called Shut Eye with a sick cast, and had like, you know, The Mentalist, like all of these things. So when this came along, I thought they were joking. Like when my team called me, they were like, look, they're really interested in you for this, you know, for Superman and Lois. I was like, that's hilarious, you guys. They're like, no, really. Like, the creator of the show would like to sit with you. And I was like, I don't even know how I feel about that. I really. And so I went and I sat with Todd Helbing, which was easily one of the greatest decisions I've ever done in my life, because he is easily one of the greatest humans I have had the pleasure to know in our business. Like, really.
Awesome.
And we sat down and it was such a transparent conversation. And I really told him sort of a lot of my reservations, because I had a lot. Like, I, you know, to me, the CW was the CW. I'd never worked for the CW. I always thought you had to be like young and hot to be on the CW. I was just like, I don't know that this is, these are not goals, okay?
Right.
So it was this real moment of like, check your ego at the door. What is happening? What is this project? And what's the creative behind it? And Todd really, you know, he had said he really wanted this to be a version of like Friday Night Lights meets a superhero background. And that the role of Lana Lang was going to be, you know, a character that a lot of the audience was going to really relate to. And we just had this amazing conversation. And I was like, I got to do this. I got to give this a try.
Right.
Like, why not?
Right.
And it's been wild and fun and great training. Like, some of the storylines that I've had to do and, you know, being a regular on a show, like all of the things and having these storylines that I've really gotten to sink my teeth into has just been dreamy. So joke's on me for judging it in the first place. But I think we all do that, you know, like I think we have these ideas and we have these goals. Right. And yeah. Our business is so ego driven, you know, like it is like you go, yeah, but I was an HBO girl for 8 years. This, like, yeah, but you're not anymore. Guess what, honey? You're not anymore. So what's next?
That it's very interesting. I am going to check it out based on everything that I have not seen you in it. I've seen a few scenes knowing that I was going to talk to you. The description of the show, basically Superman and Lois are now raising kids. Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. Almost an Incredibles meets Friday Night Lights meets. Yeah. Like kind of very interesting. And I'm definitely going to check it out. Now, are you in the Comic-Con world now, the Arrowverse stardom thing?
I mean, I suppose here,
because this
I
is a beloved character, Lana
yeah,
Lang.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. I haven't. I have really been super gun-shy about it. Honestly, just for COVID reasons, like I've just thought of going to a thing. I'm just like, oh, hell no, not right now. I'm not ready for it. But I mean, eventually, yeah, that comes with the territory, I suppose.
Yeah. You're on hiatus, but you're shooting season 3 now, right?
We start in September.
You start in September. Okay.
Yeah.
Have you gotten scripts yet?
I'm enjoying these last few weeks. No, but I did sit with the creator yesterday and I got a lowdown of season 3 and I'm very excited. It's going to be
all right, so what's going to happen?
Well, I can't tell you.
Why?
I cannot tell just you.
It's just us chatting. You can't tell
You're
us what's
going to have to tune in.
You can't tell us, I mean me, what's coming.
Right. Absolutely not.
Oh, I was going to ask you about Shut-Eye. Mm. Shut-Eye, Isabella Rossellini. Or as David Letterman always said, Isabella Rossellini.
Isabella.
Isabella. Psychics and hypnotists. Mm-hmm. Are psychics real? Do they exist?
Yes.
They do.
But there's a lot of shysters too.
But they do.
But they do.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're the second person I've asked that based on work that they've done. You're the second person who said yes. If you could know what was in store for you, would you want to know?
No. Don't need to know. Nope. I'm good. I don't have that desire to like go and like see a psychic. I feel like if you're in the flow and you're doing and you feel good and you're doing all the work and you know, the spiritual work, the mental work, the physical work, and you're in it, then you're good. Like things are gonna align as they should. I don't need to know.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah.
I buy that. I think I agree with that. I think I agree with that. I might have a slight more skepticism than you do, but I'm with you. You keep going. You keep doing you. And whatever happens will happen.
One foot in front of the other, Brian.
One foot in front of the other. Yeah, that's absolutely me. Is there any so drama, comedy, dark, now Arrowverse, all of it. Is there any type of role or genre that you haven't played yet that you want to?
Oh my God, so much. I feel like, do you feel this way? I feel like no matter how much work I've done, I always feel like I'm just scratching the surface.
Yes.
And I swear to God, I still feel that way. Like I get just so crazy inspired. Like when I watched Mare of Easttown.
Yes.
I was like, okay, that's my dream. Like, basically, Kate Winslet is my dream. Let's just call it. Okay. I think she can do no wrong. I think she's phenomenal. I think she makes incredible choices. You know, I feel like there's so much more to do. And yeah, it's great. I've had such incredible opportunities, but like there's so much more in all the genres. Like there's just so much more to do.
I love that. I think for me, I mean, I still consider myself a young man, but I have always looked older. And so, like, going back to my theater days, both in college and then even after college, I was always playing these roles that I was way too young for. I was way too young for. And so here's the crazy thing. And I'm talking about, like, roles, I mean, some in new stuff, but, like, the canon, if you will. Like roles in, like, Willie Loman, Death of a Salesman type stuff. And now it's like, oh, I'm getting pretty close to the age that I could actually do these things now where
it, with experience,
with like, the experience and the age and the thing there. I think for me, that's an exciting proposition.
For sure.
Yeah.
Ooh, I can't wait to see what you do next.
Well, one of these days we're going to do something together. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, let's do it.
That would be very, very fun. Thank you so much for talking to me. I appreciate it. It's so interesting to hear about your life and your journey. And I wish you nothing but the best in Superman and Lois,
Brian,
and beyond.
You too. Thank you. And
we'll do it together at some point. All right.
Okay. Sounds great.
Emmanuel, thank you for joining us here today. What a pleasure that conversation was. I think we need an Entourage and The Office crossover show. Let's call it Entourage Meets The Office, shall we? To everyone out there listening, I hope you enjoyed another episode of Off the Beat. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already, and give us a follow at Off the Beat on Instagram to stay up to date with all of the latest and greatest. Have a great week, everybody. Off the Beat is hosted and executive produced by me, Brian Baumgartner, alongside our executive producer, Ling Lee. Our producers are Diego Tapia, Liz Hayes, Hannah Harris, and Emily Carr. Our talent producer is Ryan Papa Zachary, and our intern is Sammy Katz. Our theme song, Bubble and Squeak, performed by my great friend, Creed Bratton, and the episode was mixed by Seth Olansky.
The journey to a smoke-free future can be a long and winding road, but if you're ready for a change, consider taking Zyn for a spin. Zyn nicotine pouches offer a fresh way to discover your nicotine satisfaction. Anywhere, anytime. No smoke, no spit, and no lingering odor. Get in gear with the Zyn 10 Challenge and enjoy 10 smoke-free, spit-free days for just $5.95. Order online and start your new journey today. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta
right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, This is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.